welcome, dear listener. It is, is it the podcast with a K still, Christian, or is it just Casterbrus? I don't know what we are anymore.
It's one of them.
It's one of them. I kind of like the fact that we're so laid back, so blasé, don't actually even know what we're called. That has a certain amount of credibility in my school.
Well, it doesn't really matter. We only have one listener, so...
Well, that's it.
It's democratic, isn't it? It's as much to do with them as it is us, really.
So, well, I mean, that means that we give 200% with two names, while they only give 100% with one person. My maths is that good. welcome to what is essentially a sort of second part of a two-part idea, second part of a one-part idea, really, which we started last week. To just take you back to it, what we did last week, and if you've not listened to it, I really, in my heart, I can't recommend that you do, because I certainly haven't, and I don't know why anyone would. But if you are that sort of person with that sort of fetish for awkward, lazy podcasts, the last podcast we did, we looked at Rose, the season one, it's not even a reboot, continuation of Doctor Who in 2005. And soft reboot, we'll call it. And we tried to position it as following on from Day of the Doctor. So Day of the Doctor would be the finale of a Time War series set before 2005, which ended where the main hero, the Ninth Doctor, I guess, or the War Doctor, as he'd probably be known in that series, finally brings the Time War to a close. And we have a sneak preview of the next Doctor in between seeing two future Doctors and meeting the Bad Wolf for the first time, who we then see in Rose, played by the same actress as a character called Rose Tyler. So we're fictitiously trying to sort of see how Rose looked like from the lens of coming out of Day of the Doctor. If Day of the Doctor was the finale for a previous season. And we thought maybe...
I must say, you...
Yep.
I was going to say, you kind of discouraged the listener. And I must admit, when I first heard the concept of this, I thought that maybe you had some kind of dodgy milk or something. But when I listened to the podcast and edited it together and packaged it, and there wasn't much editing, just basically topping and tailing it, I was engrossed. It's a really good conversation, so I would recommend the listener does listen to that first. But at the same time, they don't need to listen to it in order, because I think it's a good concept.
No, absolutely. You don't have to listen to that to listen to this. But if you listen to this, that will make more sense, or perhaps be more enjoyable. So that's what we were doing, and we kind of wondered whether maybe we could look at this further and perhaps look at the whole of season one, or series one, for us British people, and see where that sort of situates in this sort of idea. Sort of what sort of ideas, how does Day of the Doctor as a sort of finale make us rethink season one of Doctor Who under Russell T Davies, under what we could imagine to be this brand fresh new producer brought in to be exciting, character-driven, perhaps trying to localise everything after this rather epic Time War saga, to bring things down to earth again, a bit like the first John Pertwee season, bring it to earth. And it's an interesting thing, as Christian says, as we talked about it. I don't know about you, Brian, because barely let you have a chance to even say that you exist at this moment, which I haven't. when me and Brian were talking about it last week, it was kind of interesting to feel sort of how it almost kind of works. It kind of feels like that is actually what happened, that Russell T Davies would be a perfect foil for a Time War season.
Obviously, like, we're looking at it from this imaginary perspective, but we do have to remember that in the reality of it is that Moffat had to make it fit to make sense.
Yeah.
So it does kind of sit there and make you wonder, did he sit there and say, you know, what would the imaginary season have been like prior to this? But at the same time, what's interesting about this concept is that while he would have had to have done that to make this all make sense, it's very interesting to see it from the perspective that it did happen. You know, that there really was a War Doctor series, because then you look at not only is Russell writing a very different type of show, as we said, a very, very kind of personalized drama kind of aspect, but how much he, quote, references the previous series, because all those Time War mentions would now be references to a series now gone, rather than him painting a picture that we need to know in order to understand where the Doctor's at. So it's crazy to sit there and realize how well it does work as a concept, but also how well that it had to have worked when Moffat was writing it for the 50th at the same time.
Yeah. So you've just heard Brian Terranova, who is starring in this podcast.
Who is also here.
Who is also here. Yeah. Christian Corley, who you heard a little earlier, foiling me, James McLean. This is the podcast with a K or Casterbus.com. This is the second part of this conversation. We'll be looking at the whole series in the same sort of light. But before we do, I kind of felt, because Christian wasn't with us last week, whether you had any feelings on Rose to start off with. So if we're doing them in order, if we're looking at them all in order, we might as well use Rose to start off with, but use it from your perspective, so we're not just going over all ground.
That's very nice of you. I was not prepared for that at all.
No, I just realised that as soon as I said it, I thought, I've given you no preparation for this whatsoever.
Well, do you know, I like, there's a few nice things about it. There's the whole, you know, the previous quote-unquote episode where you just get a glimpse of the Ninth Doctor's face, and then you don't see him until the basement where there's a mysterious stuff happens. And in both versions, you're not expecting to see the Doctor then. You're expecting to see some sort of Auton monster descend on Rose. So I think what's nice about that is it works in both senses. And I think that's the strength of this kind of this new angle, is that I think a lot of the things will work in both contexts and have slightly different nuances to them that work well in each case.
Because in a weird way, artistically, if we go into this world where this happened, and as you say, that first shot is his hand and the leather jacket, it would almost feel like, if this was done in continuity, it would almost be like sort of saying to the viewer, because they would know the Hurt Doctor in his leather jacket. It's almost like giving almost like a bit of a continuity to it. Yeah. And then within a shot or two later, we get to see the new face. And it's like, no, it's different. So it almost kind of really works in terms of the sort of artistry of film, in the sort of continuing what people know and what they understand, yeah, and moving on.
It's also interesting to think that in this imaginary 2004 series, that the regeneration from the War Doctor to the Ninth Doctor would have been something we've not seen since the Second Doctor became the Third, because that's what the First and the Second Doctor, when they regenerated, were the first two times that the Doctor changed, but we didn't have any first words from the Doctor at the same moment. Every other regeneration since, there's always been first words of some kind. Or wait a minute, no, because Tom Baker didn't get first words, did he?
Oh, no. No, he didn't, did he?
So it would have been the first since Tom Baker, at least, partway to Baker. So the first three regenerations show...
Oh, wait a sec. Colin Baker to Sylvester McCoy.
Well, I mean, Sylvester McCoy still got first words somewhere in there.
But oh, I see.
It counts. Okay. It counts. Okay, I'm with you in that. It does count, because I guess his first words were more story-based than post-regeneration. So, yeah, you know, you're right.
But
still interesting. Interesting to think of it, because it's a choice, right? You know, like, they couldn't do it in the 50th, you know, or at least they tried and they couldn't do it. But I don't know. It would have, maybe it was a choice by the writer of that series to just say, no, I'll show his face, but I'll leave the first words up to the gentleman who's actually going to be writing him primarily for the next season.
Okay, so this is where it all gets a bit harder, because it was easier for us last week because we did a commentary. We ran the conversation alongside the first episode. Looking at these as summaries is going to be a little harder because we don't see the nuances. So following on from Rose, we had End of the World, where the Doctor takes Rose to the far future, far, far, far future. Mm. And we get to see the end of the Earth. Is there anything in this episode you think that kind of speaks, or again, it's about, I think, positioning yourself in, as I say, this imaginary world where you've just come off three hard seasons of hard sci-fi of the Time War, ending with this sort of segue into this new, more grounded, character-driven story. A little more, maybe, as we said last week, there was a request from the BBC that they wanted something which was a little more family-focused, a little less sci-fi, and a little more accessible for young audiences and family audiences. So with that in mind as well, you get to the end of the world and you get an episode which is an interesting mix of both, isn't it? Because it's quite a dark episode. There's a lot of death in it. There's some quite brutal deaths as well. So do you have any feelings on this, or any how this might sort of relate? I suppose if that's going to kick off, I'd say the one thing maybe is that we would obviously know we'd obviously known there's been a time war. We'd obviously have known that it was with the Daleks. We'd know how it ended. We'd have known about Bad Wolf. And we'd also been teased by having two extra doctors. And so we get to this point here and we're starting to get a conversation about who he is, isn't it? Rose is starting to ask, who the hell is this person I'm actually with?
You get it. You know, there's a couple of things that kind of like stick out to me. First of all, like we said, you have the brief this season is bring it on back down to earth and bring it on down to personalism and leave that sci-fi stuff behind. And the very second episode is like one of the biggest sci-fi themed ones of the lot. You know, like we brought it back down to earth for an episode. And then here we are again. It's still Earth, but the far future on a space station with all sorts of aliens around. But of course, at the end of the episode, you do bring it back down to the human aspect in Earth. But what's interesting is that, you know, we've seen, we would have just come off the boot heels of Time War, Time Lords, Daleks, you know, they would have been out there galore. And here you have Jabe scan the doctor and she's like, this can't be, you know, and we're starting to realize that the doctor's actions in the Day of the Doctor do have ramifications, whether or not, you know, he knows that he actually saved Gallifrey in some way, because, you know, we're operating under the premise that he's forgotten something that we know. So he's now, we're seeing the first hints that he's going to start going on this downward spiral, or he understands that he's already in this downward spiral, because he knows, quote, that he's the last, even though we, the audience, are sitting there kind of relating to him in a different way now, because we will be watching with more information than him and just seeing how heartbroken this character is when we know in reality, man, just go find Gallifrey. Like, it's out there. Go look for it.
Mm. That's true. So, yes, we now know that he is on a journey that we know the journey of, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's a question of when he'll find that out.
There's another angle to it. I'm going to sound awfully learned. In 2007, Paul Cornell wrote a blog post related to various canonicity things. And one thing he suggested was that the Earth's destruction in The End of the World happens later than it does in the Ark, which is 10 million AD, because of the Time War. Which is, you know, obviously we know that the Earth ends in the Ark. There's also an ending of sorts in the Ark in space as well, Theop, although that's a different thing entirely. And then this big destruction in 5 billion, whether or not there's, you know, we know the Doctor Who thing, the whole continuity and everything is fluid anyway, really. It depends on who's writing it and what they want and what they feel the best story is going to be. But looking at in that angle, we've just had come out of the Time War and everything's changed. The Earth lasts an extra 4.9 billion years, is it? Maths isn't my strongest suit. So, yeah, that's another. I think as well, there is an optimism about the end of the world as well, which is, even though the Earth ends, you know, it's a kind of a bright multicolour world on the space station. And then at the end, they drop back to Earth and have some chips. So there is an optimism running through the episode.
You could also say there's a certain amount of continuity in terms of if you'd had 3 years or three seasons of the Time War in this quite dark, serious Doctor, this no messing Doctor, this no more Doctor, and you have at the end of the world where he lets Cassandra dry up. There's a sort of very... That could almost feel like a callback as well to that Doctor that you're familiar with. This Doctor isn't entirely dissimilar to what you've seen before. There's still a bit of a no messing about him. And maybe also on your point, which I think is an interesting one about continuity. I wonder if there was a last season of the Time War, whether knowing if they knew what they were going to do, which of course they never do, but maybe they would start dropping in ideas that, you know, that time is already changing, that continuity is shifting. And so when you come to the new season, you might be actually open to the idea that what you see now might not necessarily relate to what you have seen before. Which would be kind of cool. But obviously.
Well, there's also, too, with the Time War, we kind of figured that this was kind of a Pertwee era kind of feel, where we had taken a lot of time away from Earth. Let's bring it back down to Earth. Let's bring it back home, make it a bit more heartfelt and personal kind of thing. So imagine this Time War series that we didn't really visit Earth very often, or nothing major happened to Earth as a result of the Time War, as is seemingly the case as we hit series one. But then you get here in the very second episode, and it's kind of like Russell telling you, hey, things may not have happened to Earth during the Time War, but things can and will still happen to the Earth, as evident here. It is going to end. But as that little touch of optimism that Christian was talking about, mm-hmm. even though it ended, it's still there. Because when you look at Doctor Who, and you know, you can talk about like what Paul Cornell did, saying that, you know, the continuity kind of still works. If we look at it this way, with time, we're altering time and so on. And a lot of people always fall back whenever there's an oddity in Doctor Who's history. The first thing people mention nowadays, of course, is the Time War. When in reality, watching this show, the only consistent timeline is the Doctor's, because he's the only one who's the you know, the pull through of every episode. He's the only one who's there, always relevant, and everything that happened to him, even if the Earth in the year 2000 doesn't have a space station with Zoe Harriet living on it, you know, it did when he was that Doctor, you know. And that's the interesting thing is that, you know, we're learning that through this character's eyes, we can basically do anything, which is something that we just learned from this bad wolf character in Day of the Doctor, trying to remind the Doctor of this. And then all of a sudden we're now stepping into this series where he's going to teach Rose that same thing that she basically just taught him, in essence.
I think something which I was tempted to hold back till Father's Day, since you've just said that, but there's an interesting thing where you say about the Doctor always being consistent. The one time he isn't is, well, one time off my top of my memory at this point anyway, is obviously Father's Day, where he gets killed. And then when he comes back, it's as if he's just there, it's just accepted. And it's almost in a weird way of sort of like saying that, yeah, time is fluid, people change, and they just, you know, when time alters, someone like the Doctor is just part of life. You know, that he probably knows that Sarah Jane died in the novels, or, you know, that Ace has died once, settled in three different places, you know, in different things, and he's aware of those continuities. But that's just what time travel is that it's very, very fluid, and it's sort of almost like it's based on perspective rather than actual fixed experience. Your different perspectives have different outcomes and different worlds, and I feel we need to move on quite quickly because we're going quite slowly. Quiet Undead?
Unquiet Dead.
The Unquiet Dead. I always get it wrong. It's traditional. It's Christmas.
Quiet Undead would suggest some kind of mute zombies.
Well, they were kind of... Oh, no, they weren't. They were quite loud, weren't they? Yeah. Okay, so whatever they were, how... Any feelings on this? I mean, there's obviously one thing that springs to my mind, but I will defer to my esteemed colleagues.
I'll let Brian go first.
So, you know, the only thing that's actually coming to my mind here real quick is just something I hadn't even realized before. It's the episode where all of this time travel and everything kind of starts to seem more real to Rose. You know, she goes to the future and she gets that she's in the future, and she comes back home and she understands, she calls her mom, you know, from there, and she gets it. This is all wacky and weird. But it isn't until she steps out in the snow on what she believes is Christmas Day of, you know, I forget what year that she thinks it is, and London, you know, and that's when it hits her that, oh my God, this is real. We can time travel. These things are actually happening to me, which, of course, you know, yet again, was very central. That Bad Wolf character was basically just like flitting through time with the War Doctor, you know, at this point, just two, three episodes ago.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting because now we're getting to see a life that she basically clearly was so used to. And now she's finally accepting, despite having lived through these amazing things in the past two adventures with the Doctor. This is the moment where it cements it for her.
I think as well, this episode is kind of, it's not the sequel, but it's kind of, it's a big callback to the quote unquote previous season, or quiet unquiet previous season, because the Gelth are there because of the Time War. Mm-hmm. They've been displaced. They're refugees, gaseous refugees. So, you know, anyone coming to it with knowledge of what's happened beforehand, it's, you know, this like big consequence, isn't maybe watching it without that background and context, you get a better idea of the Doctor's position, why he wants to save them.
That's what I was kind of thinking, was that sort of context. But I think also we have the first, it's not the first, but I think it's the first very, very, very candid reference to Bad Wolf. And again, if you were very aware, and I imagine if you came out of the last season with the Bad Wolf moment, you come into this season, you've got Rose, and you've got this really strong acknowledgement of the importance of Bad Wolf. And I think that's the first real play that she has in this season with Gwyneth. So I think there's that factor in there, which would be interesting. But yeah, I think certainly the Gelf, and as you say, that it almost sets this season up as almost like an acknowledged epilogue, where it sort of carries some of those themes through which people would be following, and so what those ramifications are, without, because again, I'm imagining the BBC going, want you to move on, you know, we always move forward with Doctor Who, where the show moves forward, but it's still acknowledging some of the after effects of what's happened, which the audience would be interested in.
That's a very interesting point, though, because you know, our first time round with series one, that nod was just, okay, what does that mean? What is this Bad Wolf thing? We were still trying to figure it out so early on. But this one now, with the War Doctor having been a series, she's just telling Rose again what we already know. We know who she is, and we know that this series now is potentially leading up to her becoming what we saw.
Because in Day of the Doctor, never really explains. She just picks, she plucks it, without really knowing, understanding where it comes from. So, you know, it's like, that could that be the conclusion to this series? Are we finding out what the Bad Wolf actually is? So, yeah, I think there's some interesting things there from that point of view. Aliens of London and World War III followed. Any feelings on this, aside from the fact that this was a very dark storyline in a lot of ways, and yet in the same way is very flippant and crazy and fun?
Well, the context of the story with the aliens, you know, and their comedic farting, as it were, kind of makes it feel a little bit more in place now, in a sense, because you're trying to step away from what would have been a very dark time war. So adding this touch of comedy is something they probably thought they needed for what would have been an otherwise dark story, and trying to kind of lighten it up a little bit to say, hey, we still want to tell these kinds of stories, but we understand we can't hit the depths that we did before. So that at least makes that kind of make sense and fit in a bit more in context.
I mean,
but it also still plays with the theme of the fact that the Earth can die, that continuity, like we just learned it three episodes in a row, basically. Continuity isn't constant, you know, time can change.
Absolutely. Yeah, very much so. And especially the ending of this episode, sort of. But one thing that was getting me about this episode, which I think is quite interesting, is if we take, again, it's an assumption, but from what we saw of Day of the Doctor, is the Doctor's traveling alone. So we now have this Doctor who's taken someone on board. And these two episodes really talk quite deeply about that, and the consequences of it. And that sort of sets up the pressures on him as well. Now he's got someone he's responsible to, which he wouldn't have had in previous seasons. So I wonder if that would feed into maybe watching this is we're starting, you know, we're seeing him having to bond and gain responsibility for an individual rather than a galactic or transdimensional cause.
It also is interesting, like, you know, we basically got the premise. He was alone, and now he's got Rose, and, you know, she breaks him out of his shell kind of thing, and that's why, you know, on many levels, she means so much to him. But it is interesting, coming out of a Time War series, to see why the Doctor would be so protective of her now. You know, he had been avoiding people before, and then maybe that first person that you come to, like, with all the loss that he's suffered just recently, especially even believing that he just lost all of his people, even by his own hand, he's going to be more protective of this one person that he's with right now. I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting to look at those angles, because I'm trying to, like, even struggle to see how the Slitheen kind of makes sense in the Time War kind of aspect, or coming off the boot heels. But there's something like almost like the true deviation, the true we are definitely stepping out of the shadows now and going our own direction.
Yeah, I think so. That's how I would see it. The show's moving forward. And again, it's still quite local, isn't it? Because it's actually a family. It's not even a race. It's a family of swindlers who are out to make a bit of cash on the side. So it's still quite a local idea, even if it's in a galactic level. It's not, again, it's very different to the Time War. Christian, do you have anything on this?
I don't really have an awful lot to add to what's been said about this one, I really agree. I think maybe there's something in the Doctor's motivation which makes him maybe makes him more desperate against the odds, I don't know. I wonder if there's something about the relationship with Mickey after it's happened to the Doctor up to this point, to have to rely on someone that he considers to be perhaps not up to speed, not an idiot, basically. Maybe that has a new kind of dimension to it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could all be about the sort of slow rehumanizing the Doctor that starts in Day of the Doctor with Clara. And he is still, in these two episodes especially, because he refuses to have a meal with them, he gets bored when he's around humans, and he goes off and starts soloing again, goes off to find the pig. As you say, he's got this very antagonistic attitude to Mickey the whole way through. And there's also a lack of connection as well to... He's still not connected to anything, is he? And we don't really see that until the Christmas Invasion, to be fair, where he does reluctantly sort of become a little more connected. But at this point, he is still trying to stay very distant from people.
Yeah.
And we also have in here, which I think is an interesting point, I think I mentioned last week, is the point where he says, I'm sorry for someone's death. There's the aide who they find dead, and they say, what's his name? And no one knows who his name is, and he just says, I'm sorry. And there's a kind of like, but it's almost as if, again, there's like an attempt to pull himself back into a world of people rather than causes. Again, it's a big overread, but I might be feeling that if I was watching this after 3 years of a Time War, where he's going up against sort of high concepts as much as, you know, people.
Mm-hmm. We also have that in this version of reality here, he's not acknowledged what he's done yet. He hasn't acknowledged to Rose. Rose doesn't know how the Time War ended, but you kind of get a real sense of the guilt that's on him when he talks to Jackie about, you know, what would you have me do, you know, because it's Rose's life or all these other lives, essentially, you know, like when he pits the weight of sending that missile in to kind of take care of the Slitheen. And we know the weight, we understand it the first time round, because we get all the things the Doctor has done. But right now, in this version of reality, we're privy to him ending the Time War. We just saw it in Day of the Doctor, and we understand where he's come from. But this would be our first nod to him acknowledging it, rather than the true first nod that we would have gotten in Series 1.
But this also plays into something you were saying last week about the setup of Day of the Doctor having Rose as being sort of like the dominant voice in their conversations in the barn. And, you know, almost her trying to steer him. And here we have now where he is the protectorate of that same aesthetic, even though it's not the same person. From the viewer's point of view, there's an interesting shift, and suddenly the importance of that aesthetic is shifted from being this godly end essence to this lady, and we're watching all this girl, and we're watching how the Doctor sort of shifts all that around, which I think is kind of interesting too. But like you said, he's not even explained who he was really fighting, and that nicely segues us onto Dalek, which is obviously the first time we get a mention, or no, it's not the first time. It's our first acknowledgement of the Time War in this new series, or the adversary in the Time War.
Yeah, and
there's some gaps here we're going to have to edit out, otherwise it'll look like we're unprepared, which we are. And I'm just...
Yeah. Us unprepared, please.
I was being polite. I mean, it's kind of the big one, isn't it? You think at this point the Time Lords are dead, you think the Daleks are dead, or you think the Doctor thinks that the Time Lords are dead, and you expect the Daleks to be dead because you've seen a huge explosion and bits of debris, and it's not unreasonable to think that the climax of the Time War and the Day of the Doctor, that the Daleks aren't dead, and yet here's a Dalek.
Because in a weird way, it doesn't change Dalek in a lot of ways, because as a viewer of watching Doctor Who previously, I mean, Dalek is very much... A lot of Dalek is set up not just to reinvent them, but to obviously to demonstrate them for the first time to new people. And there's obviously the famous bit of them mocking the Dalek at the bottom of the stairs, and it elevates upwards. And it's like, the audience knew that was coming to a degree. The older audience knew that could happen, because we'd seen it in Remembrance of the Daleks. And so I suppose in a lot of the ways, you know, when we see the Dalek in Dalek, it'd be all the things that we'll have seen in the Time War. There'll be nothing there particularly new from that Dalek that we'll have seen, apart from its character shifts. But so in a way, it hasn't changed that much for the older viewer, if you see what I mean. You come into it knowing what a Dalek is. You are watching the characters discover what a Dalek is, rather than the audience, except the new audience, I guess. So it's an interesting play there. So you're sort of, I can't, you know, I'm just thinking like where it's mid-drift. Mid-drift? Spins round and shoots. And, you know, at the time, even for old fans, that was something new. But for Time War experienced people, that would be something quite experienced, something you've experienced. But you would see as interesting as watching the Dalek elevate up the stairs, which you knew it was going to do, and we all knew it was going to do. I've not really explained that well. Anything else in this episode that tickles your tickle bones?
I just wonder how it would have hit, you know, like in this version of reality, having the first Dalek episode and seeing, of course, this new Doctor. Like, we always say that a Doctor, or it's been said that a Doctor isn't a Doctor until they meet the Daleks, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But you would have just come off the heels of, like, pretty much almost every episode having dealt with the Daleks, and now you get this new Doctor actually truly facing them. I wonder how it would have hit after having had so many years of it. Like I don't know, it's just an interesting one. It's an interesting one to see, because we know what it did for us before, we know how excited we were, but would people at this point have been like, man, I'm a little over it, like we just had like 3 years worth of all the Daleks, or is this kind of, oh my god, you know, this is the face off I've been waiting for, this new face, you know, this new belief system, essentially seeing these things?
Or could you have naively seen it as a the new showrunner's final nod to the Daleks, to sort of acknowledge that past, because we don't talk about the Daleks after this, you know, for a while. It goes, they go out of the picture intentionally for obvious reasons, but...
Well, he commits suicide as well, and he's led to believe that is the last Dalek anyway.
So. Yeah. So it's almost like the final Dalek story. It could almost be considered like the last Dalek story we saw was really about the destruction of the wall rather than about the Daleks.
Epilogue of the Daleks.
Yeah, because the Daleks don't do much in it really, do they? They don't really have any real agency in there.
A very interesting point, though, that the final episode of the Time War series doesn't really feature the Daleks heavily.
It doesn't, though, does it? Apart from screaming ones. So this one actually does the ultimate end to the Daleks. Not only does it have a very personal story with the Dalek and the Doctor, which almost like sort of distills the Time War into its basic essence of the Doctor versus the Daleks, but it also has the Daleks discovering a humanity, or a disgust of its own humanity that it's infected from Rose. So it's sort of almost like saying, well, this is the final story, and we're just going to do everything to this Dalek. It's going to experience the whole, the worst it can have, that can happen to it before it dies. So yeah, maybe it would almost seem like a finale to the naive. This is the send off, the final farewell to the Dalek. Excellent. Okay. So we should move on again. The long game.
No, sorry. I was just going to say, finale of the naive sounds like a big finished title.
It does, doesn't it? Yes. Yeah. Yep. We'll see if that appears in 2022. So, the long game. Funnily enough, I should just say, in a sense, in terms of this series, what I thought was very impressive with this series in the way it tracked is that, given that we find out in the last episode the Daleks were behind the long game at an upper level, this almost is a continuation almost of the Dalek story in an invisible way. But in terms of following on from the Dalek as we're doing, is there anything that really sort of hits you on this one?
I kind of more so just wonder, would we have picked up, coming off the boot heels of a Time War series, would we have picked up on any hints? Would they have put in any hidden nods that would have made us think Daleks for this story? Okay. You know, nothing that we definitely could see, but I wonder if it would have had, you know, Easter eggs in there somewhere that we would go back and find. But, like, you know, nothing story-wise. Like, the only thing I can think with this one is that it's truly kind of leading the way into the new era, you know, that this series is supposed to be creating.
The obvious way, the most obvious Doctor Who way, is that the Jagrafess is almost like the new Ogron, and they've sort of been seen in the Time War, not perhaps as openly Dalek controlled, but have had stories where there was a relationship between a Jagrafess and a Dalek, or something like that. They would sort of almost give long time viewers a sort of like worry, you know, could be something like that. Maybe that's a little too obvious.
Well, I mean, it's basically a giant prolapsed anus in a ceiling, isn't it? So, I don't know. I think we might be reaching with this one, I think.
But that's okay. These all don't have to play off of, you know, like we know that this series is moving forward, and this seems like maybe it's like one of their first attempts at truly moving forward.
Yeah, it could absolutely be that.
Interesting thing, though, real quick, before we move on to the next story, since you brought up the Ograns, the Time War series of Big Finish with Paul McGann, they deal with Ograns. There's a very interesting story where they deal with the Ograns, but in there, he reminisces and he remembers things about Day of the Daleks. And you find out that there's this Dalek that is a scientist that's been experimenting with genetics and kind of like crossbreeding Daleks with other breeds and so on. But, you know, the doctor's kind of like, why would Ograns be there? There weren't Ograns there. You know, like, what do the Daleks need Ograns for? The Daleks don't need anybody. Yeah. And you kind of find out that, like, the only reason that the Ograns ever existed in classic Doctor Who Dalek stories is because of this scientist messing about with time during the Time War. And that works. It makes sense, because you do sit there and you're kind of like, what the heck would the Daleks need higher thugs for? You know, considering Daleks don't believe that any life should exist in the universe aside from their own. And it was just kind of an interesting thought that the only reason these Ograns existed is because this one scientist kind of broke their most cardinal rule of genetics and played with their race, with other races, and that's why they exist there in the past. And
the reason they existed is that we've seen in the old show when a Dalek had to sort of open a door or press a button, it would manage, but it would be a slow, awkward shot of an object, a sucker or something, trying to manage to actually touch something, to move something. While an Ogron can just walk up and just open the door for him. I mean, it's just, you know, they're just the axle. They're just the grease.
I thought they were just there to light their fags.
To sort out their distended prolapse. I don't know. They've got multitudes of uses. So we go from the long game to Father's Day.
Yes.
Which again has big relevance to the Time War, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does. And there's the big kind of, I suppose, guilt thing for the Doctor attached to this as well, because those things, arguably, obviously, Rose has a big reasoning is a big part of it, and is maybe entertaining her wish to see her father. Maybe is obviously a dimension of it. And then there's the other side of it. When the Reapers appeared, they wouldn't have appeared.
Yeah.
If the Time Lord still, quote unquote, existed or existed in our universe.
So it's very much a final frontier, or a frontier, should I say, to avoid the Star Trek reference. It's very much the frontier. We're in a new frontier, essentially. No one is guarding time anymore. Everything is
up. New law. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's up for grabs. It's all very wild, wild west, which I think is quite interesting, and maybe a way of trying to show the vulnerability of the new series, that, you know, that everything after, say, 3 years of it being this massive integrated Time Lord, Dalek, Doctor escapade, we're now in a world where it is just the Doctor. And maybe off the back of the death of the Dalek in Dalek, this is again sort of going, yeah, it is literally just this box, this mad box, and this mad Doctor being mad together through mad adventures. Clearly without a thesaurus. It's quite mad. So, anything else on this one? I think the paradox is the big thing, yes. And also maybe, like you say, Christian, that's sort of demonstrating his almost, from being a character which has avoided people, is now almost becoming quite, almost overly entrenched in them.
You know, we always had the Doctor, whenever anybody would try to say, let's go back in time and save so-and-so, and he would always tell them why we can't. You know, like Adric, for example. And here, you know, he does so willingly, obviously because it's Rose, and we're meant to believe that it's mostly because it's Rose kind of thing, and he's got that new friendship and so on. But we obviously get that it's the guilt of what he has because of what he did through the Time War. But I imagine that not just having the weight of ending his own race and his own want and need to go back in time and see his own family and his race, I imagine there would be a heck of a lot of people lost during the Time War that he would have loved to have gone back and met. I imagine that over the 3 years of the Time War series, we would have met and lost quite a few interesting friends of the Doctor. Even if he was trying to distance himself, they still would have gotten in the way and gotten hurt. And this episode would have been more meaningful in that respect because he's allowing Rose to do the one thing that he's not able to do himself.
And also, it's almost like he'll now obviously be aware there's no Time Lords. So maybe before, like with Adric, he literally couldn't do it. As soon as he would try, you know, Time Lords being Time Lords, especially if the War Games branch was involved, you know, they'd stop him before he even tried. But here, he knows that he has the freedom to be able to be naughty like this. But he's also, as you say, mindful that he can't do anything about it because the ramifications would be huge. Which is why he's not gone and done anything himself, because it would be very dangerous. So there's an interesting thing there maybe as well, that it's kind of showing how free everything has become.
If we believe for one moment that the Doctor would have gone back to save Adric. Okay.
That is true. I also, as I said, I think last week, I think what's also really good about Father's Day on the second watch of the season I liked was the way that it really nicely sets up Jackie's motivation in End of the World for helping, parting of the ways, for helping Rose get back to the Doctor.
Yes.
Because that's like a real stumbling block. How do you get a mother to agree to let their daughter go back into a war where she'll never see them again? How do you get past that? And that's an almost near impossible thing to do. And this is almost like the only way you could try and do it is by pulling the father card. It was a very, very, very deft move there. So moving on to Empty Child and the Doctor Dances.
Yeah, well, it's war, isn't it? So exactly. And there's possibly feels a bit at home. He certainly seems to be able to get about, although he does. On the other hand, he knows there's something going on and he can't put his finger on it. And obviously makes a fool of himself in the bar. But I think maybe having that whole war aspect to it a series later, but then having him completely, almost completely until the end of the episode, detached from finding out what the answers are and making Rose the focus of the episode and Jack, I think that works, because you've also got Jack as a time agent, and that brings with it its own kind of questions following what has happened the previous run.
You know, you just brought one thing up that really hit me, was, which is how casual the Ninth Doctor walked through World War II. You know, like, to him, we never really saw him react to anything. It just was. It was just normal to him. And yet you contrast that with the Second Doctor in the War Games and all the different war zones that he was in and how he reacted to being in each war zone, you know, mostly with terror, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
How normal this is to him. And we would have just come off the boot heels of you know, that, and that's an interesting thing to think of, too, watching the War Doctor enter the Time War and maybe seeing that gradual change from, this is terrifying, I don't want to be here, I don't want to be in this, to, it's just another day. And then here he is still reacting to what he's used to what he's lived for so long.
Well, maybe this would be like an ordinary day after, again, the Time War. One would assume, given how it changes the Doctor, that it's something like he'd never faced, never experienced. So the level of complexity and threat, and maybe from a viewer point of view, every episode would be almost like a mission, because I doubt there'd be anything that would be surprising. He wouldn't just be wandering around the universe as the War Doctor in my head. He'd be going to specific places to deal with specific things. So here we have an episode which, again, is very Wild West again, that he lands, and it's almost not like a holiday, but he walks it, because this is like, compared to what he was doing before, this is so much less complex, but it's still interesting to him. I wonder if there's a bit of that as well, maybe to the audience as well. And we have a time agent, as he said, we've got this time agent in there, which again speaks to things, again, far smaller than it's almost like the universe is in its usual routine once again. We have crooks, we have cops, we have people in need, we have heroes. You know, we don't have the complexities of war. And yet, as you say, we're situating it within a war, which is kind of cool too. I think the other thing as well, worth saying as well, nobody dies in this episode, which is the big, I think I said this last week, you know, nobody dies, which is a big emphasis at the end of the second episode, which after three series of people dying, reborning, dying, war, just being war, maybe again, this is a, you know, Davis's season's call out to say, hey, you know, we can have fun here. And sometimes, you know, we're a fresh start, we can have people living occasionally. I don't know. It's maybe that statement could be seen in that way.
It's interesting, too, when you consider that the quote-unquote villain of the story is essentially something that its main intent was to heal.
Yeah.
So not only is nobody dying in this story, but the main threat was literally just trying to heal the entire time. So that the entire story, set during one of the worst times in our history, was an entire positive outlook.
Well, the first time maybe he starts to actually become, literally start to become a doctor again.
Another line of optimism throughout as well, just like with the end of the world following the previous kind of sad and intense run of Time War episodes.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, again, it sort of adds a little bit of tone and texture and pushes the series on in an interesting way. So we go on to Boom. Well, we've got the last three, which are interconnected quite heavily. So we've got Boomtown, which I'll just start off and say, I think, interesting from several seasons of assuming he has no companion. By near the end of this season, he's got two and a third, kind of, with Mickey.
And yet, they're still earthbound, which is really kind of, you know, what would we have seen during the Time War, that they're trying to really make things feel more homey, because everything is just earth, earth, earth for the most part. And makes sense for what they did originally, but they're still bringing it on back down. And here they're bringing back again, like I think like I said, with Aliens of London, World War III, the Slitheen would have been the first, like, true variant. You know, Rose dealt with the Time War, the end of the world dealt with, you know, a world ending and still kind of an out there concept, a sci-fi concept kind of thing. And then Aliens of London, World War III brought us in the first kind of characters that were not Time War related. And here we are picking up on those threads again, you know, like trying to cement we are in this new this new era, this new reality.
And the new, and after, say, three seasons, I keep saying three, of a heavy Time War thing where everything's very structured, suddenly you have again another emphasis of the Wild West, where the TARDIS actually has to sit on a crack and refuel itself, because it doesn't have any way else to keep itself going in the way that it always has done before. So again, we get this feeling of things being very basic and not survivalist, but you know, you are on your own. You know, you've got no eye of harmony to be drawing upon. You've got no time or you've got no time lords. You find Archer energy in a crack and you sit your TARDIS on it and let it charge it up. It's quite an interesting way of sort of again emphasizing that they're on their own.
You know, I thought this episode almost kind of betrayed the theme that we're going for when the Doctor and Rose kind of realize that Bad Wolf has been following them around for so long.
Mm.
But it does work, because I keep forgetting again that the Doctor doesn't have memory of the events of Day of the Doctor.
But
he won't until one of his future selves. You know, he'll have that memory later on. So it's interesting to think that not only, you know, we, the audience, are getting to know Rose as she goes on this journey to become the character that we just met in Day of the Doctor, but then the Doctor gets to kind of meet her all over again, in essence. There's two first meetings for Rose and the Doctor, in essence.
Three, technically, if you count Tennant's farewell.
Sure, yeah.
Anything else on Boomtown? I'm just trying to think. I mean, you could, I don't know, yeah. I think, again, without overanalyzing it, we are, as you say, rooting it back in the local, where we have these very character conversations, because Boomtown is a character piece, isn't it? You know, we have that lovely scene in the restaurant where the Doctor and Margaret are arguing the pros and cons of this sort of harsh capital punishment, and that great line about her saying, I've saved someone, and he's saying, well, you know, that's just how you live with yourself, is by occasionally saving people when it suits you, makes you feel like you justifies yourself as a reasonable person, because I there's some brilliant stuff in there.
You know, there's actually, it's not until we put it in this perspective that I started realizing this, but you know, the Doctor just left the Time War. He just destroyed his entire race as far as his memory is allowing him to think, and his alternate home, his second home, is Earth. And in the second episode of this series, we see that the Earth ends. It's over. He takes Rose there as if it's some kind of fun, you know, date to go on to watch your world end, because he just watched his world end.
Oh, that's
then you get the Unquiet Dead, you know, the Gelf. They're going to take over the world. In essence, another end for the Earth. Aliens of London, World War III. Their plan is to destroy the Earth and salvage it afterward. Dalek, if that Dalek survived, just one Dalek, he says, could take over the entire Earth. You know, the long game. They do take over the Earth, and then even by the end of the story, you know, they still kind of leave it in shambles. And then Father's Day is another end for the Earth, because just trying to save her father. Empty Child, the Doctor dances. If they lost that one, again, would have been another end of the Earth. And now Boomtown, again, her plan is to destroy the Earth and surf away. I never realized this before, but this entire season has been teetering around the idea that the Doctor's second adopted home, or Rose being put in the Doctor's shoes, has actually almost lost the Earth in basically every episode.
I love that passive-aggressive idea of him almost taking her to see the end of her world, as if somehow that will give her it's almost like a sort of a catharsis, in which he's trying to find in his own way of outliving his own world and his own decisions. There's some sort of weird, I don't know, quite. Yeah, that's a really interesting way of looking at it, which.
Yeah. Mm. Almost like he was hardened, like even though he had to destroy his entire world, it was what it took to end a war. And, you know, we learn that he's got PTSD, and we learn in Day of the Doctor that he's not going to remember that he saved it. So he's going to have to live with what he did.
Mm.
But perhaps he was so hardened to a certain point that, yeah, I've got this PTSD, I'm dealing with it, but I haven't truly dealt with it yet. To me, it's just something that I did. It was a necessary means to an end. And taking Rose to the end of the world was maybe him, in essence, trying to see, how should I be reacting right now? What would Rose react like if she watched her world end? You know, it might be him trying to find, and I know he's not, but it may be him trying to find his humanity, in essence, you know, realizing something's wrong. I felt nothing. I'm sure I should be feeling something. Maybe Rose can show me what I'm supposed to be feeling.
What a gift.
Bad wolf.
So we'll put Bad Wolf and Parting the Ways pretty much together, I think, because they are largely the same. And again, not sure what there is in Bad Wolf, which perhaps, I mean, obviously the name of it would be the sort of hint of the name that we'd have known from Day of the Doctor. Is there anything else in Bad Wolf that strikes you?
I don't know. For us, it's definitely okay. It's coming to a head. We're figuring out we're going to meet this Bad Wolf character again. We have to be, you know, as this season is coming to an end, we know what this means now. We've already known it. But it seems like Bad Wolf is like this season's one last shot at going, hey, we're leaving the Time War. Let's do this fun episode because this is what we're going to do from now on. But we still got some heavy stuff we got to deal with. And it seems like it's their one last kind of romp on this.
I could see speculation out post Gallifrey saying, is this a suggestion that the Bad Wolf was actually something to do with the Daleks, and the way the Daleks survived was because they were Bad Wolf, or they were controlling the moment Bad Wolf? You know, would you be starting to speculate that sort of way around?
Yeah, definitely. In context, this is basically, there's this the idea that the Daleks have survived and that maybe everything... Maybe there's that old dimension of everything actually being some sort of a simulation for the Doctor, and they've actually won the Time War.
Yeah.
And everything that's happened so far has been an illusion. I mean, that takes into the whole other dimension. But at a more kind of, at a more eight-year-old watching Doctor Who for the first time left, you've got the idea that these aliens who you're never going to see again are actually back, and there's thousands of them, and they're going to conquer the Earth, and you're actually, in the next episode, going to see them damage the Earth. That's kind of quite exciting, isn't it?
Well, that's what was so brilliant about this season, I think, is that, because if we ignore the Day of the Doctor malarkey we're doing at the moment, it's still a bottom line of how this season worked for us, as you say, and how it also worked as a brand new thing for a brand new person. And it's really exciting to look at it both ways. Look at it as we're looking at it now, but also to look at it, as you say, as an eight-year-old. And sort of go, well, you know, wow, this is a really... And that, when I first rewatched this a couple of weeks ago, that was my first take, was like, this is an incredible series for a new person to come into. The way it sets up, you know, the first episode half sets up the character. The next two episodes go back and forward in time. We still don't know who the Doctor is. We don't know anything about it. Suddenly there's something about a war he came from and some enemy. We don't know the enemy. Oh, my God, this is the enemy. What the hell is this? And the enemy disappears. And, you know, when we build up until this big thing here, it must, you know, it's a really great roller coaster of a ride. I think one thing I would like to say in Parting of the Ways, which kind of is really interesting, we haven't even got to the Bad Wolf bit itself, is obviously, as we were talking about last time, you know, having Day of the Doctor project two future Doctors. So, you know, Day of the Doctor is, okay, three, technically, if we count Capaldi, who's also in there. Maybe he'd be added in a future re-release of the episode as a bonus Easter egg, as a sort of remastered version. But this whole idea of, at the end of this series, you get to see one of those Doctors that you first met in Day of the Doctor. So you get introduced to Tennant in that episode as this sort of... Casanova, you know, romantic Doctor character, and then suddenly the last shot of it is him, and that would be a really weird thing to feel, that sort of journey we've taken from seeing him in Day of the Doctor to meeting him in Parting of the Ways for that one line. That would be weird.
You know, it's interesting too, because you go to Day of the Doctor and essentially Bad Wolf is there trying to stop the Doctor from doing, you know, this actual most horrible act that he can think of. And she kind of is trying to show him how to kind of save the day without doing this drastic thing that you're planning. When in reality, too, she would already know if season one, let's forget series two or anything else had come after, that moment in Day of the Doctor, she knew, I already took care of the Daleks for you. I just have to stop you from taking care of your race and more so taking care of what's left of your hearts kind of thing. You know, because that's, it's so interesting when you look at it now in this perspective, Day of the Doctor, there she's sitting there. She's the weapon. She's the moment. She can take care of the Time War by ending it all, by allowing him to just press that button, but instead comes up with an alternate plan. And then yet just the end of one season later, she wipes out the Daleks entirely by being the Bad Wolf.
I mean, could we always say that the energy at the end of Parting of the Ways is the TARDIS, as that's what it's alluded to being. But is there that much difference in time energy between the TARDIS and the moment? Is there a common denominator there? Is the Bad Wolf in Parting of the Ways as much the moment as the moment is Bad Wolf? Which would make a lovely sort of poetic dovetail. But
well, it's a Time Lord device, isn't it? So there's no reason why it shouldn't be.
I'd be wondering that, I think, if I saw this episode.
Compatible.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, Parting the Ways, as I said last podcast, is the one where everyone dies who's on Satellite 5. Everyone dies in some way or another, bar Rose, who isn't there. So it's kind of like a very much a callback to the Time War, the severity of the Daleks, maybe a reminder as well of their danger, as well as introducing them, as Christian says, to a new audience that the show would suddenly be there to be trying to tap into, who didn't watch the darker previous seasons because it was too adult for them, and sort of set up this show as something for more of the family.
Now, the long game is set in the year 200,000.
Right.
And this is 100 years later. And I wonder if we've ever seen Daleks after 200,000 in Doctor Who. Because if not, then this would have been the actual end of the Daleks.
Oh, that's
a good question.
Podcast in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tune in next week.
When we discuss which is the actual end of the Daleks.
We'll be going through every episode of season one to discuss when was the end of the Daleks. Yeah, why not? No, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, that's a debate already in Doctor Who, isn't it? I mean, obviously, Evil of the Daleks was at the time.
Yeah.
And
final
then,
end.
Yeah, and continuity. If you look at Lance Parkin's work, there's obviously a suggestion, as this does as well, that's probably not the case.
But if you take what Jack and other characters said, you know, the Daleks were essentially just legends, which to me said that any of the Dalek adventures that had previously happened only happened in the Doctor's continuity. They and people have maybe a trace memory of it because it happened, but it was erased. But that's the thing. Any story that happened prior to Series 1, even if it took place after the year 200,201, 200,100 wouldn't still be the true end of the Daleks anymore, because anything moving forward would be. So we would really only need to look at the new series, because you can't take the past as read, as happening still or having happened. It did, but not anymore. It's
There's that interesting line in Rose, isn't there, where he sort of talks about the world spinning beneath his feet. And he sort of makes another suggestion later on in the season, how I think he says it to Rose, how he feels time. And I almost imagine that if you're a Time Lord, pretty much where you are right then, right now, is very much where your senses are, because everything else is so fluid and flexible, and you're hyper aware to that sensation that time is constantly in flux, as it is in Doctor Who. And yet you in that moment are the only thing which isn't, to a degree, which is why you feel yourself on a planet spinning through the solar system, because that is really where you are. You are grounded in that, almost like that oasis in that eye of the storm, while everything else is crazy around you, which
That kind of echoes the thoughts of, Adric reading the Doctor's diary, essentially. Saying that, like, on the first page, this thing happened. The second page says it never happened at all. But the third page said that it did happen, but quite a long time ago, kind of thing. And it's really, again, all perspective based. if you were there for it, then it happened, even if it was erased.
Which
it,
is weird.
It did happen.
Because it means one of the central tenets, axiom of Doctor Who, is in the hands of Adric, the one person that most Doctor Who fans would absolutely loathe to have to, you know, if you had to trade, imagine them going through Doctor Who trying to work out the core values, the core sort of continuity values of the show, tracing it through all the episodes, finally leading to an episode with Adric and a quote. Oh, that must be so frustrating. I've said before, I quite like Adric, so that's fine with me. But yeah, that throwaway moment probably speaks more to what Doctor Who really is than any other moment in Doctor Who, one with Adric. Because you have to see it that way for it to work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that is the whole series. So we've looked at the whole series moving from Rose to Parting of the Ways, sort of tracking some of the sort of elements of Bad Wolf and of the Time War. And again, so I don't know if there's anything you'd feel like summing up on this. I'll say my summing up from having spoken with you two is that this is very much a reminder of it being the Wild West, which we kind of felt anyway when we watched it the first time, but it would have felt even more so after a really intense 3-4 year Time War arc of all these massive crazy missions, big concepts, folded time, I don't know, all these weird manic wacky things, and then coming down to this really down to earth series where all of that has been lost, literally all gone, and the show's been able to move on. That must have, I kind of felt that would have been quite refreshing.
Absolutely. I mean, anytime you get bogged down with like the same, well, you know, I was just relating to this in a completely different way, watching, I don't know if you ever watched The Closer, which is basically over here, it was a cop drama, kind of similar to like, you know, the Law and Orders or SVUs in the respect that, you know, they dealt with murders on like a daily basis kind of thing, but much different in the respect that it had a much more lighthearted feel, even though they were dealing with such horrible things. And me as a viewer, I was sitting there going, this is so refreshing because I can only take, you know, an episode of Criminal Minds. I couldn't watch an entire season of Criminal Minds without losing my mind because of how deep and dark it is. So if you had 3 seasons of a time war that were dealing with some pretty heavy stuff and putting the weight all on the Doctor's shoulders like that, because you would have to make us feel what the Doctor's going through, this would be a huge welcome change coming here and just seeing, you know, almost Monster of the Week episodes, you know, that there's a running theme, but there's almost just back to the Monster of the Week episode kind of feel. I think the only other thing that I personally would add would be, you know, the whole Bad Wolf meme. Mm. With there having been a Time War series, in a sense, it makes me think that the Bad Wolf meme was not just there for Rose to kind of discover that she could save the Doctor, that she wasn't leaving a trail just for Rose to follow for herself. She was leaving it for the Doctor to see if maybe she could jog his memory to let him know everything's okay. You didn't do what you think you did. Mm. You know, and that might be another through line of hope throughout this series that he just, you know, obviously didn't grasp, didn't really latch onto, but in essence, Rose was that hope.
It's an interesting segue as well. I think if you think of the Bad Wolf in Day of the Doctor, as I think we said before, as being that segue into a new era that sort of ties up the Time War, but also opens up the world away from the Time War as well. That's a kind of interesting way to. I think the other interesting thing would be, I mean, I, as I say, I imagine some of Day of the Doctor would be remastered with a few extra fun things for its 50th anniversary. So say that they pulled it out as a repeat and then they dropped in Peter Capaldi in there and a few of the photos on the notice board in the Black Vault. But I like the idea of like Jack's time bracelet, his vortex manipulator that was actually used in Day of the Doctor. You'd see it on his arm in the next series, but there would have been no assertion that that's what it is. I think they actually mentioned in Day of the Doctor is Captain Jack's as well. So you would Again, it's a weird way of looking at it, but that would be a really fun thing as well if you had that sort of amount of clues in the final episode of Day of the of that previous season that you could then see and see plotted throughout the next era.
It would be interesting to think too. Yeah. Like, did Russell ask them to include these elements, or did Russell just go, "Oh, I'm having that"? You know, in this scenario.
Exactly. Were they just open ends for Russell to take and tie up as he wished?
Yeah.
And so Captain Jack was created alongside Stephen Moffat to answer who this Captain Jack and this Time Vortex was, Time Vortex Manipulator was. So yeah, there's a lot of fun to have on this. I think we've probably covered all the bases. I mean, obviously, if anyone out there thinks of stuff that we haven't, do feel free to let us know. I'm sure we'd be vaguely interested.
The only last thing would honestly be the end of the series. A familiar face shows up. You know, we were just introduced to him as a doctor in Day of the Doctor, and then here we go, boom, now we've got him. We waited an entire season to actually meet him again. When would Doctor Who have ever done that? That would have been an entirely unique idea.
Been absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And to sort of know more about him than the actual character does as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lovely idea. And it's a shame television isn't so orchestrated that we could sort of see that sort of thing happening, but it's not that sort of
the MCU could do that, couldn't they? Not the BBC.
Yeah, you got to have money and time, and the time is made through money. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I think we're done. I hope you have enjoyed this ramble through this unusual scenario. I'd like to say that it has been an interesting experience for me, because I'm not sure whether Christian's aware or not, but his video has been on the whole time. So,
has it?
Yes.
I knew you were going to say this.
No way.
So just seeing your arm mainly fiddling around, and sometimes you'd pop into shot like you are now.
Because you had a pause at the exact moment that I was reacting, and I knew that you were going to say something, because I'm like, oh, he's seeing it too.
Yep.
Oh, that's so funny.
Nothing terrible. It was just funny. That's all.
There were some points where I was thinking, please let nothing terrible happen, because do we just carry on?
You've seen me eating. Embarrassing.
It's been crazy.
It was fine.
It's been fine. Seriously, there was nothing but arms, largely elbows, and occasional angry faces fiddling with headphones.
Yes.
So we'll stop it there. We'd obviously like to wish you all, hope you had a happy holidays, Christmas. And I'm sure you'll have, well, I hope you'll have a good new year, fingers crossed. Yeah. Christian's kind of made a visual motif as to what he thinks of that. We'll be back soon, probably, whenever we have time, inclination, or interest. It's really like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. With this podcast, whatever it's called.